Blog Talk Radio.
Zito?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to hear Butch is doing well himself. How's it going, Frankie?
Yeah, he's down in Captiva. I'm good. Good. So, I don't know if you guys saw, but did you guys see that Mayweather was now is a promoter now in Nevada?
Yeah, it's funny. It's one of the things I was going to bring to light today. For those that don't know, Floyd Mayweather, got his promoter's license for the state of Nevada. His company had already applied, I believe, for a promoter's license in New York as well. So obviously he's looking to matriculate his way out of boxing, you know, out of fighting in the ring. He's obviously looking to grow his promotional arm. However, one has to speculate also with him getting his promoter's license in Nevada. He had stated when Richard Schaefer left Golden Boy that he no longer wanted to work with Golden Boy. Many speculated that the reason why he's working with Golden Boy for this September show is because Golden Boy Promotions had reserved the MGM Grand for September 13th. With that being said, if he does have his promoter's license, going into the May show, he could very well promote it himself without Golden Boy at all.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, he's cutting out the middleman.
Yeah.
And that's
smart.
That's wise for him and a money-making move for Money Mayweather. So, I mean, and anything that he seems to be doing lately, you know, as the well saying goes, if it makes sense, it makes dollars.
That's true.
You know, I mean, and what you have to also remember, too, is that Al Heyman is his advisor. And Al Haymon right now has a stable of a little over 50 boxers. And a lot of the boxers that we've watched over the past few years on the Golden Boy promoted shows were actually not signed with Golden Boy, but signed with Al Haymon. With that being said, Al Haymon has the muscle as well as the names of the boxers to go ahead and promote his own shows. The question becomes, what about Richard Schaefer? If there's a no-compete, then obviously he wouldn't necessarily be allowed to be affiliated in any particular way.
Well, and that's a good thing because it opens boxing up a little bit more. As far as Al Haymon goes, I haven't seen Al Haymon with the capacity to not really work with too much of anybody as far as money goes. I haven't seen him really in contact exactly with Bob Arum's fighters, but then again, I don't want to speculate anything. But as far as that goes, it's good. That seems to open things up a little bit more.
You know what the funny thing is we always talk about this Cold War, but you know what we can harken back to? We harken back a lot to the Floyd Mayweather-Miguel Cotto fight. Well, that was a Golden Boy Top Arum deal. And, you know, before Manny Pacquiao, Oscar De La Hoya. So the Cold War has only been really about 3 or 4 years old, but it's obviously killing boxing on many different levels. With Floyd Mayweather receiving a promotional license, will Mayweather promotions go ahead and do business with Bob Arum? Well, Floyd Mayweather said he would never do business with Bob Arum. I do think Al Haymon is a smart businessman, and he could see the benefit financially because that's what it all comes down to. Like you say, like they say, if it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense. So he could see the benefit financially to working with Bob Arum. Also, from Arum's perspective, he said, you know, that the Cold War sort of thawed because he and Oscar De La Hoya have a relationship with Richard Schaefer. It appears that relationship could likely move forward. We're looking at Manny Pacquiao being the jewel of Bob Arum's crown. He's fighting Chris Algieri. No disrespect to Chris Algieri, but he's just not known on the world level the way most competitors that get a shot at a Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao are. Part of the reason for that is because of this Cold War, and his stable is thin at 140 and 147.
Now, you're right. You know, it's going to be interesting to see because now you've got another big promoter, another big name who's going to pull fighters. You know, and is that going to thin the pool even further?
You know, as far as talent. You hope not. You hope not. You just hope the fights that need to be made get made. I don't care how many promotional arms or promotional outfits they are. We just want to see the fights that need to be made get made.
Right.
If Mayweather Promotions goes and is in the business of making competitive fights and making the fights we want to see, then we'll support them. Golden Boy, at one time, they were in that business. Lately, you know, they've been feuding with Top Rank, and we haven't been getting these fights. So I think boxing fans in general, and I think I can speak for just the average hardcore boxing fans, not even necessarily the casual fans who only know Mayweather and Pacquiao, but the hardcore fans that don't see a lot of other fights they like to see, like maybe a Ruslan Provinikov against a Lucas Matisse. We don't get to see these type of wars because of these egos, so to speak. So I think, speaking, from a fan's perspective, as long as the fights get made, fans don't care who's promoting them. They really don't.
And one other point that I think needs to be said is when you look at this Cold War and these little problems as far as promotion, the management goes, you see that more in the lighter, in the hot weight divisions as of now, in the 140 pounds, in the 147 pounds, maybe a little bit in the 154 pounds. But the higher you move up in weight, it seems like the better you get, the promotions get along with each other.
I think part of that is because both of the main promotional outfits get a little bit more thin as they move up the weight scale. Once you get past junior middleweight, I mean, who does Aaron have? It's Chavez Jr., his main horse at middleweight,
yeah,
or at super middleweight now. Golden Boy, they have Canelo Alvarez at junior middleweight. They don't have anybody necessarily. Peter Quillen is their middleweight guy. So what happens is it seems like the further up the scales they go, the talent gets thinner in each of the promotional outfits. When you look at the real strong horses in the heavier divisions. Klitschko's from Europe. You know, at light heavyweight, you have Adonis Stevenson. Is Adonis Stevenson promoted by Golden Boy? I believe he's Adonis is promoted by Golden Boy. But then you have Kovalev, who's promoted by our friend Kathy Duva in main event. Neither affiliated with Aram. Aram, if he wants to get a fight in that, he's going to have to throw Chavez in because that's his main chip above 160. At 160, Golden Boy has Peter Quillen. Aram doesn't really have a horse in a race. Once you go down to 154, then, you know, things also change a little bit because, you know, Golden Boy has Canelo. But, again, they, you know, Bob Arum was talking about, hey, maybe we could reach a catch weight for Manny Pacquiao against Canelo because, again, he doesn't really have too many horses in a race at 154 and 147. So, yeah, it just appears that the further you go up the scale, the more independent promoters and European promoters are grabbing up some of the talent.
Exactly. And really that's where the talent is as far as the fighters, especially the upper weight fighters, seem to be coming more from Europe.
It doesn't seem like there's any really good heavyweights coming out. I mean, it used to be America would produce all these great heavyweights, but I got to agree with Zito. I mean, most of the great heavyweights are coming out of Europe right now, especially the Baltic states.
You know, we were supposed to get a heavyweight, a pretty competitive and important heavyweight fight tonight between Derek Chisora and Tyson Fury. Chisora fractured his hand sparring against Alexander Ustinov. The fight was going to be called off, but Ustinov, who was, you know, helping Chisora train for Fury, decided to step in. And I saw the weigh-in. Fury started talking trash to Ustinov. Ustinov himself is a big guy. Fury's standing at 6'9", about 250. Ustinov, 6'7", a little over 300. A very solid guy. However, Tyson Fury ended up pulling out because his uncle fell really ill. So it's a shame because this is the third fight in a row Tyson Fury has had canceled due to no fault of his own. So, so that's a fight I was looking forward to that did not come off today. Speaking of heavyweights, just wanted to segue there right quick.
Yeah, that was going to be a good fight. Well, either one. I mean, Chisora and Ustinov. But, I mean, there again, you have somebody from Belarus.
Right, right.
You know,
Two Brits, right. And, you know, the one thing I do like about Tyson Fury is, regardless of what you may think of his ceiling as a heavyweight prospect or a heavyweight contender at this point, he is ranked in the top 10 by the Ring magazine. Because of his ability to sell a fight, because of his ability to promote himself, and because of his willingness to walk around with a chip on his shoulder and to try to back up what he says and to say a lot, he does inject some life and charisma into the heavyweight division. I think any time we get a chance to see Tyson Fury perform, we get a chance to hear him speak, again, which injects life into the heavyweight division.
Absolutely. Tyson Fury helped himself out tremendously with that Stevie Cunningham fight. That just made him action-packed, so it sells himself even more.
But speaking of heavyweights and American heavyweights, tonight we get who a lot of people feel is the best young American heavyweight, Brian Jennings, fighting against a Cuban southpaw and Mike Perez. So, I mean, that's a very competitive fight on paper. I think most people lean towards Brian Jennings because of his athleticism. He's more consistent. But this will definitely be his toughest test. In some ways, could be both men's toughest test. So that's a very competitive fight tonight. It'll tell us a little bit about the future of the heavyweight division outside of Vladimir Klitschko.
Yeah, that's going to be a pretty good.
Also, just and real quick, Gene, I'm sorry. Also, the winner, from what I hear, would be the mandatory for the winner of Stavern against Wilder once that fight happens.
Oh, okay. Well, that's going to be interesting. But this fight tonight should be very interesting with Perez and Jennings. As far as that goes, Perez has all of the skill in the world. He's nice defensively. He throws cute punches from offensive angles. He can hit hard when he puts himself into it. And Jennings, he's well-rounded. He has a nice jab, pretty defensively responsible. He can be hit at times. squares up at times, but he's responsible all around. The only thing is, with this fight, I see 2.5 rounds of more or less Perez winning the action. 2.5 rounds. The second half of that third round, I could see Perez fading, going on for the rest of the fight, and Jennings just getting not stronger, but being as strong as he is. And he just keeps being technically sound, just being there. Jennings will stalk you, especially if you're going to be tired. And that's one knock on Perez, his conditioning. It seems like every fight that I see him in, he shines in 2.5 to 3 rounds, but then he's falling all over the place. He's tired, he's breathing with his mouth out, he's always with his hands down, he's slipping punches without trying to block them. He's not counter-punching. I don't see him being successful at all against Jennings unless you're in the best condition.
You know, and it's funny that you said that's a knock on Perez, because to me that is the thing about Perez. Perez can, again, Perez is a Cuban southpaw. At heavyweight, he's a Cuban southpaw. I think we all know what Cuban southpaw means. Probably none of us more so than Erivan de Laura and Anito Donaire. They know what Cuban southpaw means. And so that's always tricky. And a guy like Perez, just like a guy like Law, a guy like Rigondeaux, these are guys that are just typically not going to be outboxed. Where Perez has an advantage over an Erivan de Laura, and to this point, Guillermo Rigondeaux, but again, Rigondeaux is so polished that no one's been able to force him out of his game. And a little bit Casamayor could do this, but what Perez does is that you don't see a lot of the Cubans do is Perez fights inside. With a lot of the Cuban stars, once you put pressure on them, they fight off the back foot and they still look to pick you apart. Where they can be outworked a little bit if they're not catching you, make you gun shy. Perez is the type of fighter, when you turn up the heat on him, he puts his feet down and he fires back. Against I hate this because I have such a hard time pronouncing this gentleman's name, the gentleman that was injured in the Perez fight, Zito Muhammad Absamalev. I just have a hard time with that name. But
I'm not sure, but I remember.
Yeah, but you know, we all know I'm talking about the gentleman who is recovering from the coma. But in that fight with Absamalev, he pressured Perez and he turned the heat up on Perez, and Perez responded in kind. Again, what Zito was saying, though, is what Perez did do, though, is even though he responded, and he's very resilient, that showed, you know, tremendous heart, he didn't show the best conditioning. He you know, constantly was sucking wind, and he sucked it up. And you kind of got the feeling that if his conditioning was better, he would have won the fight more decisively. It wouldn't have been a slugfest. He would have outboxed Absamalev the whole fight. But because of his conditioning, he couldn't kind of keep that motor going enough to move those legs. Against a guy as well-rounded, quick as well. Brian Jennings is probably one of the quicker heavyweights. Against a guy like that who's not necessarily going to outbox Perez, but a guy who can box with Perez and be just as quick, if not a little quicker, and outwork him, that's going to be a tough fight for Perez. Perez, again, like Zito said, if Perez isn't in great condition, it's going to be hard. Where Perez does stand up in some sense is that he's a guy who really likes to set his own pace. Brian Jennings is not a guy who will force the action. He's a guy who will fight. He comes to fight, but he's not a pressure fighter. So Perez will have more time to bait and set traps. But like Zito said, if he begins to fade after the third or fourth round like he normally does, it's going to be a tough fight for him.
Yeah, and the confident Brian Jennings, he will stalk you down, go to the body, and he'll lay some leather on you.
And because Brian Jennings is very competent, like you said, he's very solid in every area.
All
very
around.
Competent. And, you know, to this point, he showed, especially considering, you know, the guy's like a latecomer to the game, but he reminds me of Tony Thompson in the sense that he shows, even though he's come to the game, he shows a tremendous calm in the ring, and that calm allows him to think his way through a fight. And guys like that that can maintain that calm, like a Tony Thompson, like a Brian Jennings to this point, like a Floyd Mayweather, those guys that can maintain that calm, these are the guys who typically have the higher boxing IQs. Marquez is another one. And that's what I see for Brian Jennings. For a young guy who came to the game late, he has a pretty good, you know, boxing IQ. So a guy like Brian Jennings, who's competent in every area, at the very least with a good boxing IQ, is not necessarily going to fall for a tired Perez's traps. And that will be the problem. Perez could get tired and start just looking to set up traps. And Brian Jennings is too competent to fall for those. And that's where it'll be an uphill battle for Perez if he's not ready to go 12 hard rounds against Brian Jennings.
And that's the thing. Perez has to do – yeah, oh, yes?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, and this is a battle between 9 and 10. I mean, these are guys that are up and coming. You know, they're establishing themselves. And Jennings with that, what's he call it? What's he call that defense of his? The silly shell or something like that?
Oh, the Philly shell?
Yeah. You know, I saw an interview about him, and, you know, the guy's got massive arms, and his arms are long enough to protect him from body shots. It's hard to get in on that guy, you know, and you really have to pick him apart. And if Perez isn't willing to be patient, which, you know, I've only seen a couple of Mike Perez fights, but I wouldn't say patience is one of his virtues. As far as Jennings, I think Jennings is patient. He will look for that inside shot, and that may be what it takes.
Jennings, he throws more in combinations than Perez. He'll get to picking you apart. He'll look for his shots defensively. He'll let two hard ones go. But Jennings is set up. But he'll set up a few jabs up top, and then he'll get you two times to the body and come back with an uppercut.
Agreed. You
know, Jennings, he will set you up. So, I mean, that work rate, that's hard to deal with.
What Jennings has to be concerned about, though, is, again, this is a step up for Jennings. And, you know, to some extent, it's a step up for Perez. Perez, again, was supposed to lose. He was brought in to lose against Abspilov, and we know what happened there. And then he just had a draw with Carlos Takam. But Takam is, at this point, a lot of people are considering him a comer as well. But for Brian Jennings, this will definitely be the most elite-level boxer he's ever faced, and definitely the most elite-level counterpuncher. Perez is the type of guy who, when you're throwing those combinations, which Brian Jennings is apt to do, if he gets a little careless, he can get caught in between. And Perez is the guy who's competent enough in that area, counterpunching. And not only that, but managing distance. Perez is a smaller guy. I'm going to assume Brian Jennings has a longer reach just because he appears to have long arms even for his height. But Perez knows how to manage distance pretty well, and he knows how to counter very well, as every Cuban I've ever seen box knows how to. And so Jennings needs to be careful when he's throwing a combination. He always needs to be competent defense. Jennings, if he gets a little careless, it can be throwing combinations at times where he's not always he's always defensively conscious, but he's not always defensively responsible. When he gets to throw in combinations. And that's where a guy like Perez could take advantage. But again, all this is completely mitigated if Perez is not in shape. So.
And I expect that to happen. I expect Brian Jennings to get popped some of the times while throwing his combinations. That's going to happen. Perez is that good. I just think that during the course of the fight, those shots are going to have less effect. Perez is going to be looking a little bit more to get away from the pressure. And as you said, Brian Jennings is not a pressure fighter unless he gets confident and unless that's the type of fight that he feels good fighting. He can fight off the back foot all right. He can fight in the middle of the ring very good. He can bring it forward when he feels that he has the need to do that. With Perez and managing distance, with Perez and managing distance, you're absolutely correct. But that's based on feet. And, and as far as his conditioning goes, I just have to keep going there because I've seen quite a few of Perez's fights, and his conditioning has never seemed to get better.
And one thing I think you just said, you know, about Brian Jennings, that he could fight in the middle of the ring, he could come forward, he could move backwards. All those attributes you said about Jennings, you can also say about Perez, and I think that's one good thing about this fight is that both guys are very well-rounded fighters. and they possess a high skill level, especially when we're talking about heavyweights, where a lot of guys at this day and age look at heavyweights as being these fat, sloppy guys who throw these barroom type of punches. Though Perez does not have the pristine body or conditioning of a Brian Jennings, he's a very skillful fighter. And what you're going to see is a high level of skill for heavyweights tonight, especially with the one being an American heavyweight.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, it's going to be a good fight. I mean, and that's a good card. You know, the Jennings Perez fight is on. They're the undercard of the
Golovkin-Gill fight.
Golovkin, yeah. I couldn't remember his name.
But you know what? For you know, speaking of Gennady Golovkin, Triple G. Triple G. And the reason why I say his name like that is because the fact of the matter is Gennady Golovkin, Triple G, right now is the legitimate resident boogeyman of boxing. He is, right now, the Mike Tyson of this, right now, this era. He is probably the most feared, avoided boxer in boxing right now, universally recognized as. Every top contender at middleweight that has had an opportunity to fight him has not fought him, has actually stepped out at different times. Daniel Gill is fighting him tonight. He had a chance. In fact, he was stripped for not defending against Gennady Golovkin just a few years back. Triple G is the real deal. But, yes, this is a step-up for him because he hasn't been able to get a lot of elite competition in the ring, not even really world-class to a certain extent, competition in the ring. When Matthew Macklin and Curtis Stevens are your best victories, then there's still a lot of work to be done for you to prove. However, unlike Lucien Boutte, who was doing the same thing that Gennady Golovkin is doing at middleweight, Boutte was doing at super middleweight. He was destroying people that they put in front of him, though he wasn't being placed in front of elite foes. However, there were times when he was placed with a Liberato Andrade, a quality foe, we saw that there were chinks in one Lucien Boutte's armor. Golovkin, to this point, has shown no chinks. He's shown good conditioning. He's shown a good chin. He's shown adaptability, ability to cut off the ring. He hasn't faced an elite-level boxer, but how many of those are out there? And until he runs up against an Andre Ward at 168, he will not face one. He's the real deal, fellas.
Let me tell you something about Gennady Golovkin. And I went back, because I'm going to watch this fight, went back and watched previous fights. This guy doesn't play. A lot of times to where you see guys measuring each other out and guys trying to pick their shots, yeah, that's a part of boxing. He doesn't play that part of boxing. He'll measure you out, but, I mean, it doesn't take too long for him to know what he wants to do. And usually it's the same thing to everybody. He's going to hit you hard to the body until he gets an opening to the head, or if you don't fall from the body shot, he's going to get a left hook to the head. That's going to happen. He throws very good punches from angles. His setup shots destroy you.
Yeah,
I mean, as you said, he's Mike Tyson-ish in a different sort of style and everything.
Yeah.
Except for when that bell rings. When that bell rings, Tyson was a little more not caring if he got hit on. Golovkin can measure you a bit more.
You know, Tyson was more explosive, and Tyson was better defensively. He slipped punches much better than Golovkin.
Yes. And Tyson also, he had a not caring thing to where he was just trying to kill. He was trying to destroy.
Whereas Tyson was explosive, Golovkin is like heavy-handed. You know what I mean?
But he's explosive
power.
I mean, he's not as quick. Tyson was hand and foot quick was phenomenal. I mean, for his size, like you could have pulled Tyson down to a Golovkin size. Tyson would have been faster and quicker than everybody down that there.
Oh my God!
Way.
Yeah.
So I mean, that package there was different. Golovkin, he's not as fast, foot or fist as Tyson was, but he hits
more methodical.
Just more methodical. Period. He hits just as hard to miss. Per punch, because the guy, he'll fold you to the body, to the head. He hit Curtis Stevens. As I keep saying, Curtis Stevens was on the ground with the face like, woo!
That's what it looked like.
He's looking, eyes wide open, his mouth cocked to the side like, woo, this guy hits this hard. So, I mean, that, you know, the Golovkin does. I mean,
you know what I think?
I understand against the competition that he fought, it's the same as Tyson coming up. You know, competition's competition, but you know when the guy hits hard. And if anything is, maybe Golovkin can be outboxed through 12.
Maybe
a guy can outclass him. But there's one thing that you're always going to have to deal with. This guy's going to come. He's going to put the pressure on to hit you hard, and that he has that.
Hey, you know what? For Golovkin to be a hard puncher, to be really, you know, in essence, a methodical stalker is really what he is. He's hittable, as most methodical stalkers are. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why he's hittable, I think, is because he will, you know, attend to square up. But when he tends to square up, it's so he can cut off the ring. You know what I mean? And, you know, because he will square up to throw that shot to the body.
To the body.
Yep. But he's very smart defensively. He has very subtle hand movement, and he parries punches very well with his forearms. But I think the thing that I really notice about Golovkin is to be a methodical stalker. What he doesn't do, at least with the level of competition he's been facing, he doesn't give up a lot of rounds. Usually methodical stalkers get out boxed for the first three or four rounds, and then they start to come on and wear you down. Golovkin is not like that because he places punches so well, and his timing is so well. And you know what? He's willing to counterpunch. He's willing to punch in between your shots. And what he really doesn't do, at least, again, with the level of fighter he's faced, is he doesn't allow the pace to be dictated to him. Thus, he's never really given up a lot of rounds. Tonight, it could be a little bit different. One thing Gil has in abundance is conditioning and durability.
Energy.
You know what I mean? And conditioning and the durability. And Gil is a high-volume guy. And, you know, Gil typically wants to try to push a pace that you can't match. And at the same time, he wants to be a little slippery, but he wants to hit you to your body. He wants to outwork you. So it'll be interesting. The thing is, it's a little hard to outwork a big puncher. It really is. It's hard to stay in the wheelhouse of a big puncher. But if Gil is smart, and what I could see Gil trying to do, it's difficult because Gil himself is a smallish middleweight, but possibly trying to push Gennady Golovkin back and trying to smother his shots while at the same time just outworking him. But, again, you're in Golovkin's wheelhouse, and to this point, Golovkin's shown enough boxing acumen and IQ, catch you when you step in. Golovkin is not a backward fighter, but he showed he could fight going backwards. So though it's a step up for Gil, Golovkin is a huge favorite, and I kind of agree.
Yeah, and Gil, and you're right, Gil, he's an energetic fighter. He likes to – he has a very good left hook.
Mm-hmm.
He likes to unleash the left hook to the body a lot, you're right. He'll jab. One thing about – Gil will move his feet, too. He's not going to be a stationary target at all. He has that conditioning to do so all fight long. One thing about Gil, and I think this is why he'll suffer this fight for as long as it'll last, is that Gil is stiff. He's not defensively cute, or he's not defensively slippery. He'll try not to get hit. Now I've seen Gil fight in the Sergio Moore fight where Gil got hit square quite a few times, and kind of, I don't want to say rocked, because Sergio Moore didn't seem to rock him, but he seemed to gain Gil's respect. Now, Sergio Moore is a bit of a more pure boxer than Golovkin. If Moore can get Gil's respect, I don't see Golovkin not getting Gil out of there. And I don't see Golovkin not hitting Gil. I mean, Sergio Moro was willing to step in, you know, to Gil's energy to go ahead and counterpunch him or to even, you know, to start push the pace a little bit and hit Gil. Gil's not going to slip everything within everybody. And that's, I mean, especially when he's stiff like that. He'll throw his punches, but he'll always come back to that stationary stiff position. And that can be timed and caught, especially by a left hook, especially by a guy like Golovkin.
And then, you know what? And then I think, too, the other huge elephant in the room that we're not talking about, Gil doesn't have a huge amount of power. You know, I watched the Curtis Stevens fight against Golovkin. I watched it again recently. And, you know, Curtis Stevens, you know, he caught Golovkin with a couple shots. And Golovkin had to be defensively. That's what I liked when I watched the Curtis Stevens fight, is that Golovkin had to respect Curtis' power. And even though he showed the ability to take Curtis' shot to a certain extent, he had to be defensively responsible in that fight because he couldn't get caught with anything ridiculous or else he could have got dropped. And that's a fight where, you know, at different times you thought maybe Curtis was going to land a shot that could drop him. We know Curtis has that type of explosive power. Daniel Gill does not have that card. He does not have that up his sleeve. He does not have that in his toolbox. What Daniel Gill does not have is a great eraser, as power is called. And again, that's another reason. If Daniel Gill hit as hard as Golovkin, then he might favor Gill.
If Daniel Gill hit as hard as Golovkin, he would be champion.
If Daniel Gill hit as hard as Golovkin, he'd be Marvin Hagler.
he would be champion.
Because Daniel Gill is very durable, and Daniel Gill is prepared to go 15 rounds. That's the one thing you know about him. You're not going to get him out of there typically with one shot. He's never been stopped. He's never really, really been in trouble in a fight. Golovkin has a different type of power. He has the type of power that not only is it capable of putting you to sleep, but even worse, he has that type of power, like a Julio Cesar Chavez, that when he hits you, it chips away, not only at you physically, but at your resolve, at your stamina, at everything. It just chips away from you as a person to the point that you actually leave a piece of your career and yourself in the ring when you walk away from that man. He has that type of heavy-handed power. And so for a guy like Gil, your typical fight is playing right into that type of opponent's hands. And, again, Gil's a guy who throws a lot of punches. Is he going to throw a lot of punches against Golovkin and put himself in those type of positions to where he gets hit constantly hard? Because what it does, it makes you say, I have to try something different. Even though I'm still here, that's one thing I took away from the Matthew Macklin fight when he was stopped by Gennady Golovkin. What Matthew Macklin said was, the way he was hitting me, he goes, he was hurting me more each and every time. He goes, I didn't get up because it was just going to get worse because of the type of power this guy puts on you that just chips away at your physicality and your resolve. Again, part of Daniel Gill's charm is he's known for his durability, his resolve. But honestly, can't see a guy, though a lot of people didn't, you know, thought the fight could have gone either way. Can't see a guy who two fights ago got outboxed by Darren Barker hanging in there with Golovkin for too long.
Yeah, and I equate Golovkin actually, you can have me thinking when you said Tyson, I equate him more of a George Foreman style. More 1970 circa George Foreman.
But much better, much better technique.
Much better punch placement technique, and much better defensive awareness, I'm going to say. George didn't mind getting hit in the face that time. But then at times, depends who George fought. George, he'd slip punches too. And he'd slip a punch and throw a little short uppercut underneath to the body, something Golovkin would do. To where, you know, Golovkin, I would almost equate him with a shorter punching George Foreman. He throws his punches more short, compact, to where George was more looping. But the way they stalk you, that's kind of in the same manner. the way they try to lay the hurt on you, they hit you everywhere. That's kind of in the same manner to me. And you're right, absolutely right about the Stevens fight. Golovkin had to slow up against Stevens. He hit him hard once and thought he could chuck him. Stevens, he had to throw a little something to come back. Made Golovkin box a little bit.
Yeah,
made him box.
Stevens, I remember
made
that. Stevens and Golovkin would have left hook. Golovkin said, "All right, we got to watch how we do this now."
Yeah,
let's not be stupid.
Yeah, he made Golovkin slow up. And when I saw that, that told me that it seemed like Golovkin had a certain maturity about him. And one thing really like about Golovkin and that you don't see with many power punches, he always keeps his feet under him.
Yes,
always.
He does.
You don't ever see him leaning too much forward or leaning too much to the side. You don't see him trying to generate power any other way besides him a proper technical punch.
Yeah, he's always in perfect position to punch. Always.
Yeah.
Always. Always.
Always has his feet.
Always. But again, you know, and I guess the what we have to say is in accord with his level of competition. Again, he's fought world-class guys, you know, to some extent, but he hasn't fought a world beater yet. But at middleweight, who could beat him? You know, maybe Sergio would have a chance circa 2010, you
yeah.
know what I mean? But even that guy might be too small for him.
154.
Miguel Cotto? No.
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 Now you talking about a guy too small? And that's the thing. You can ask Peter Quillin. I don't. I'm not
and
sure.
I know
Peter
Quillin. I know Kid Chocolate's a friend of the show, but I don't favor him going into that matchup, though.
Well, I'm not sure Peter Quillin would want to match up against Stevens. I mean, certain styles, I think, make certain fights. Now, Peter, he can box from the outside at times, but he has the habit of being flat-footed and trying to shoulder roll and not really shoulder rolling, keeping his head up too high.
Yes.
And getting certain
that shoulder stiff.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't
that shoulder roll,
he's
shoulder square.
You can't do that against certain people.
But
we've seen Peter kind of gain people's respect to the point where they're not going to come on and try that with him.
Yeah, Peter has the ability to take some rounds from Golovkin because, you know, when Peter, he can box on his feet and he will stay behind that jab. And I could see Peter taking, and he hits hard enough. Well, Peter hits hard. And
he hits
so
hard.
So Golovkin can't just run up in there. So
well,
I could see Peter taking a couple rounds from Golovkin, but I would see Golovkin eventually figuring him out, cutting off the ring, and then things would happen.
I see more breakdown.
Yeah,
I see more breakdown. Just more, you know, just chip that, as you say, chipping away a piece of you. You know that?
Things would happen.
You know, as they say, you know, it hits you. But, I mean, sometimes you just, I mean, you
can
call anybody really out
for middleweight.
Golovkin
has not been past the eighth round since he went 10 with Kasim Uma, since he stopped Kasim Uma in 10. Now, Kasim Uma is a tough guy. God,
and would throw thousands of punches. Thousands of punches a fight.
But that was the last time Golovkin's been that far. Gil typically has the durability. I mean, he's always had the Gil has the durability and stamina to go that far. And it'll be interesting to see if he's able to hang in there and keep fighting. It'd be interesting to see, you know, what Golovkin looks like in, you know, a hard, high-paced fight after, you know, 7 or 8 rounds. And you know, that's what could be interesting about this fight because we do know that Gil is known to be durable and he's known to push a pace. So, again, it's just that, you know, I don't know how durable you can be against this guy no matter who you are. I think unless you're actually bigger than this guy or unless you're, you know, a really, really all-around – boxer like an Andre Ward, I don't see a durable, high volume guy beating this guy because you got to stay in his wheelhouse too long. And no matter how much you tend on being high volume, after getting hit with a few of those shots, your volume goes down.
I think a good fight would have been the Golovkin against Paul Williams. I know Paul Williams didn't fill out to 160, maybe not. But I think Paul Williams would have been wise enough would have been wise enough to box like he boxed against Winky Wright.
That Paulie and Golovkin would have been a good fight. That would have been a good fight. Because, you know, here's something. Paul Williams doesn't get broken down. He doesn't do that.
You got to do it.
And he only went to sleep that one time. He lunged in and got caught with a perfect shot. A perfect blind shot, period.
His chin, to me, was solid. I mean, I've seen him just, like, Paul would get hit with a good hard shot and keep punching, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And when he boxed from range, he was really difficult. And that's the guy who we know would throw 1,000 punches a fight. And, I mean, because he would be able to keep Golovkin at distance, that would be a difficult fight for Golovkin. And, except that Paul, his defense was his offense. And you don't want a defense offense with Golovkin. That's not the defense offense guy. Can't defense offense. Gil's going to find that out tonight. You can't be defense offense against this guy. Gil's going to find out. Watch how quick Gil's going to say, I got to try defense. Watch.
Well, I think the difference is Paul would be capable of doing that all fight long with Golovkin. Not saying he would. But as you said, Paul was tough. So you could kind of get shots off on Paul, and Paul would still keep doing what he's doing. So I'm not going to be convinced that Golovkin is going to touch Paul enough to break him down.
Well,
unless you're
going to
get the Paul Williams that's going to come looping and uppercutting.
Yeah,
Paul
you're talking
behind
about
the distance.
Yeah, Paul that fought
Paul.
Winky Wright. The Paul that
yeah,
fought Winky Wright that still let 1,000 punches go, but fought let 1,000 yeah. punches go from across the ring. Winky Wright said after the fight, the guy was punching me from across the ring.
That
Paul was a problem for anybody. That's the Paul that Floyd Mayweather thought he was going to have to fight. He said, I'm going to fight that guy.
No, and that's the thing. I mean, Golovkin, I think he's capable of being outboxed. It's just going to take a special kind of guy inside who has the goods on the inside to go through that.
And he's going to have to be a competent. I mean, he's going to have to be an elite level boxer.
Yeah.
You know who's the guy who said who was calling him out? He said first Canelo, then Mayweather, then Golovkin. That was Errol Vladelora.
I could see him dancing circles around Golovkin for maybe 8 rounds. No. Laura's arm is a little crazy.
Oh, nah, man.
Maybe four rounds. And he'll be catching Golovkin. It's just Golovkin's.
He'll be catching him.
I mean,
right.
He was scared. Golovkin didn't let him go against Canelo like that. So, I mean, more or less for fear of physical retribution. He's definitely not really going to let him go against Golovkin. He can hit him once. You talk about it, chip a part away. Hit Laura once. That might be half of him.
If Laura was coming down from 168, or if he was 160,
yeah.
thinking about moving to 168, but you 154, and that's where you belong. Oh nah, man, you gotta leave that guy alone.
You can't go his weight.
You know what? And the funny thing is Golovkin size wise is not the biggest middleweight, but what he does, he has a pretty good reach for his height. And he also he's dense. He's very dense.
Mm-hmm. He's dense, and his power punches are properly thrown. He twists his hip with it. He snaps that shoulder a bit. Golovkin, he knows how to throw a technically hurtful punch.
And you know what? It's funny that you talk about that. I think one reason why Juan Manuel Marquez has been my favorite fighter. For so long, outside of, you know, his calm. To be an elite counterpuncher, you have to have calm under fire and calm in the pocket. That's one thing I like about him. But he throws such a technically correct punch that I think it amplifies his power. And I think Golovkin is, you know, like you said, it's the same way. I think he's a bone-dense guy,
like a Chavez, so he would naturally hit hard, naturally be heavy-handed. But I think the fact that he throws a technically correct punch, he turns his hips, he sets his feet, and he, you know, throws a really crisp, straight punch, I think that amplifies his power as well.
And that's a lost art. Throwing a technically good punch is a lost art. I mean, people, they don't even throw jabs technical anymore. When you see people hooking, coming up with a hook, they slap it. They're leaving their palms open. They're coming, they're cuffing. You know, you're supposed to turn your knuckle over when you hook. You're not supposed to leave it flat out like in a slapping motion. You're supposed to almost leave it to the side to where if you stiffened your fingers out, it'd be a chopping motion. But now you ball it up in a fist and you throw it, hit them with the flat of the knuckle. That's how you throw a hook. You don't throw a
What I was taught in the gym is if you're not going to hit them with your knuckles, why are you going to punch?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Seriously, that's what I was taught. Now, I believe that sometimes a flicking jab to set things up, you know, one thing I like about Rigan Dial is he's one who keeps his right hand in your face. They think a lot of times if you read his punch stats, you see that he has low percentages. But a lot of that is, well, first of all, he throws a lot of phantom punches to look for openings. But what he does with his right hand is he paws a lot and keeps it in your face. And he uses it not just as a jab, but he uses it to hand trap with orthodox boxers. He hand traps their jab. He uses it to hand trap it offensively and defensively. The moment he feels you tap his hand, he slips instantly. The moment he feels you try to smack his hand down, he slips because he anticipates the jab coming over.
Real quick, you know who else is good at that?
Good.
Bernard Hopkins. That's why he doesn't lose against outfalls.
And you know what? Yeah, exactly. And Bernard Hopkins, and it's funny, he's another one who does not throw an incorrect punch. Obviously, you improvise, and sometimes you have to throw an incorrect punch. But these are guys who throw technically strong punches. The reason why Bernard doesn't get the knockouts that a lot of other guys get is because he's typically moving. But he showed against Shumanov when he steps into a punch, he can hurt you, which is why you just don't rush in on Bernard Hopkins either. So it's something to be said about technique amplifying power. It really is.
So, I mean, well, apparently we have our predictions. Our predictions for tonight.
Well, you know what? I'm much more torn on Perez and Jennings, to be quite honest with you. You're right. I lean towards Jennings, but I can see a path for victory for Perez with Gil and Golovkin. That path to victory for Gil, it calls for me to see something that I would not expect, you know, something kind of outside the realm of scientific predictioning. It would cause for variables that we didn't expect, that, you know what, like Golovkin's gas tank's not like that, and Gil is tougher than we thought. And, you know, so it just – there's a reason why he's a big underdog.
Yeah. The more competitive fight's going to be the Jennings-Perez fight. I mean – It should be.
On paper, it should be.
On paper. Once the fists start flying, you never know how it's going to go. I mean, Gil can start knocking Golovkin down. Next thing you know, we had a fight of the year.
Yeah, but that would shock everybody. I mean, the guy's never shown any kind of capacity or even leanings towards having that kind of power.
Right.
Yeah. Or commitment to throw it. Gil. He's not going to step in to try to knock you out. He's going to try to outbox you to a cent.
No, you're right, and I don't think you can out. This is not a fight you're going to be able to outbox.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what's next. I mean, assuming Golovkin wins, what's going on with Chavez Jr.? That seems to be his only lineup as far as a big money fight, or Cotto. But I don't see Cotto's people staring Miguel anywhere near Golovkin at this time.
No.
Not when they have a bigger money fight and potentially more winnable fight against Saul Canelo Alvarez that could come to fruition. There is talk that for possibly Canelo's November opponent, obviously a Cotto doesn't seem to be in the picture for November, but there is talk and I believe it's November, of Canelo possibly fighting like a James Kirkland maybe. There was somebody else because, you know, they want an opponent who actually there was talk of Cotto or Canelo both possibly being interested in James Kirkland. And part of the reason is because they want an opponent who they could sell on pay-per-view as well.
Oh, I'll tell you one thing. Canelo and James Kirkland, I think it would be a lot more interesting than Angulo and Canelo. But I think it would end up that way. End up going that way. I think Canelo's just a little too big, and he just can't run up on Canelo like that, which is essentially James Kirkland's game. I don't know if Cotto wants to deal with James Kirkland at all. I think that his people need to steer somewhere else. Maybe they need to steer toward Golovkin, you know, just to get the money for it. Kirkland, he's a different sort of animal. I don't think Cotto is capable of outboxing Kirkland.
Here's what
I think Cotto can do it. Not all fight long.
If Kirkland is with Ann Wolf, because to me that is the big caveat. If he is with Ann Wolf, part of the reason why we haven't seen, you know, James Kirkland since his thrilling victory on a Regan Diakbeko undercard against Glenn Tapia is because, as typical with James Kirkland, he's not in jail, so it's not as typical. But also with James Kirkland, managerial issues. He was trying to get out of his contract with his manager, and Ann Wolf, who has a partial managerial contract with him as well. He was trying to get out of these contracts, apparently. But apparently things are smoothed over, and so now they're, you know, talking to the people of Canelo and Cotto about possibly being an opponent. With that said, if he is with Ann Wolf, this is what I will say about him versus Canelo and him versus Cotto. Point blank, if he is still there and standing after three rounds, watch. Just watch the TV. Not saying he's going to win, not saying he's going to lose, but if he's still there after three, he doesn't get hurt that much anymore. And he keeps throwing and keeps applying pressure, and he's a very strong guy who himself has fought at 160. When he's been vulnerable, it's been early. When he's been hurt, it's been early. When he's been shaken, it's been early. Once he kind of warms up, he starts to begin to walk through punches, where Canelo, I think, would give him trouble is Canelo is big enough and strong enough to where you are not going to, first of all, you may not be there after three, and you're not going to consistently walk through those punches without consistently being hurt. However, if he's there after three or four, he's going to make Canelo fight like Canelo's never had to fight before. Miguel Cotto, he doesn't want to see Antonio Margarito, let alone a bigger, maybe even more relentless,
faster,
harder hitting per shot. No, he doesn't want to do that. But boy, I like to see that. Cotto, man, oh, man. Boy, if he's with Ann Wolf, that Cotto fight is the fight I want to see, because that fight is life and death. I don't think he makes Canelo fight hard, but I don't think he takes Canelo life and death. For Cotto to win, that's life and death. Those are the kind of fights we all like.
Yeah, that'd be – I agree with you there. I'd love to see that fight.
And Cotto is less apt to be able to hurt Kirkland as much.
Yeah.
Even though he's more apt to outbox him, he's less apt to be able to hurt him consistently. In spite of what you may have seen against Sergio Martinez, he's less apt to be able to hurt him consistently than Canelo Alvarez.
What I will say is this. You can measure up how Alvarez did against Angulo, and imagine Cotto fighting Angulo.
Oh, I've imagined Cotto that several times. I imagine that
Cotto
just
be
for funniness. when I'm feeling down, that's what I imagine. What if Cotto fought a really, really, you know, fresh Angulo? Man, I feel so much better. That would be funny.
See, but that's how I measure that up, Sue. So, I mean, Colo and Canelo, right now, if I was middleweight, 154, Colo, I would be seeking him out. I'd be seeking him out.
Well, you know, the thing is part of the reason why that fight doesn't look to appear to be happening is Canelo said he has no interest in moving up to 160 at this present time. So I don't know if he's trying to bait Cotto down to 154 for a big money fight or if he's just holding out through negotiations, what have you. But obviously, first and foremost, those are the two biggest pay-per-view stars not named Floyd or Manny. Number two, it would possibly, at least from a financial standpoint, be the biggest fight in the great traditional boxing ethnic rivalry of Mexico versus Puerto Rico. So that would be a huge fight. And, you know, part of what Canelo could be saying could be part of the negotiation ploys going on, or he could, you know, be seeking something else as well, because he considers himself, at least right now, he probably would be considered third behind Cotto, or behind Pacquiao and Floyd, with Cotto's and Martinez pay-per-view not doing well at all. But, of course, we'd have to see the numbers with he and Laura as well.
Well, guys, we are we're about up the hour. It's been another hell of a, you know, good hour.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's one hell of a good fight on tonight on HBO, so at least you're not paying a shit ton of money to watch it.
Yeah, but so if this is free, people should definitely check out the Perez and Jennings fight. I think that's going to be the fight of the night, and you definitely want to see how Gil's going to do against Golov. That's something that, you know, it's boxing. Once the fists start flying, you never know what's going to happen. So,
very true.
Yeah, I think Jennings and Perez are going to be the fight of the night. I think that Golovkin's just going to manhandle Gil.
I can see why you would think that.
Yeah. Popular opinion. I mean, I don't always sway with the popular opinion, but in this case, I think I will have to go there.
I can see why you would go there.
And the other card is, let's see, it's just Jennings and Perez, right? That's the two fights, Golovkin right, so it's just the two fights. And that starts
on
in
9:45, yep.
Yeah. So,
all right, so
on the West Coast, Frankie.
Well, it'll be 6:45 on the. I'm actually 2 hours behind, so I'm looking for in what about 2.5 hours? I'll be watching that fight.
Where are you, Frankie? Mountain time.
Mountain time.
Yeah, or Mormon Standard Time, which is usually about 20 minutes behind the time they say they're going to be there.
Well, like DC time.
That's what I like to call it anyway.
People thought Mormons and blacks had nothing in common. Like, this show is obviously taking a turn for the worse.
That's right. Now that we've crossed just about every racial and religious line there is.
And I always say that in honor of Dr. Chris for not.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
tell me
guys,
when you want me to lead you out, Frankie.
Yeah. The Mormons are probably going to be coming through the windows any minute now.
Oh, yeah. All two of them that listen to the show, right?
Yeah. So, well, guys, thanks so much again. We're keeping Bobby's dream alive. Another great show. We mentioned Pacquiao, which I don't know how long that streak is, but it's a hell of a long streak. Again, thanks so much, guys. You know, who wants to lead us out tonight?
I'll leave you guys. I definitely want to thank you guys. I want to thank you, Frankie. It's been enjoyable. And
sure.
I want to thank you, Ty. I'll see you soon. And these shows are definitely in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call.
Pleasure being on with you, Zito. Frankie, love when you're on, man. I wish we had you here more often with us, man. I really enjoy talking fighting with you. I miss seeing you, my friend. Zito, I will see you soon, though, sir, and we'll look back, enjoy these fights, and break them down. Look for our work, Buckle with the Knuckle, at BuckleWithTheKnuckle@gmail.com. Look for our work on Doghouse Boxing. Thanks to Benny Hernandez. Butch, we will see you soon. Take care, guys.
All right, guys. Thanks again. Great show. This show and all shows on the Fight Words Radio Network are done in memory of my brother, Robert Anthony Carroll, who is the founder and creator of Fight Words, who we lost on June 18th of 2011. It was a great loss to not only our family and our extended family, Ty and Zito included, but the boxing world as a whole. Again, thanks, everyone, for listening, and we will see you guys next Saturday night.
Shemalek ma yelama, shemahezah yelama, sona shenevorat fet, hakuig again ma yelama. Stare at hand with mind aflame.